Well, as usual, it's a normal. I don't know whether we had any music on then, but anyway, we'll make a start.
Many versions of it overlapping each
Oh,
other.
good. That's
So
great.
you...
That, well, we'll get it right
Remix.
one week. We'll get it right. So, good evening. Welcome to episode 57 of the Malt Travel
Hello, everybody.
podcast. I did hear that the Sheffield Hopcast claim now that they're the longest running beer podcast. They had a they've had a, quite a break actually. The last one they was December. And they've done a recent one, which is an interesting read. But listen, so we're not quite in that league yet, but we're carrying on 57. So Nicholas has just cracked one open. Nicholas, what are you drinking tonight? Because I always forget to do this.
Caconi Yorkshire Pride, very nice, very refreshing. 3.7. Obviously, Acorn Brewery does go back a long way. Barnsley, sadly, although it was never admitted, it was Sam Smith that bought it and closed it down. But obviously, two guys, I think two guys took it on, reopened it, and it's always a reliable beer. So, yeah, that's an Acorn Yorkshire Pride.
Yeah, there's no point in asking Bruce because he's probably got a cup of tea
Yeah, I haven't even got tea. No, I could have a drink tonight, but I haven't got one actually. Yeah, well,
and
I will have
I'm
to re-log
breaking
on.
you.
I'll say I will have to rejoin you in a couple of minutes because I've used Evie's laptop and of course she's revising. So
Go on then.
sorry, I'll have to go.
Give us a pop over then. Well,
I shall catch
I'm making a bit of a change because I've actually got a
up.
bottle tonight. I'm actually on some Woltop Scarborough Fair, which I'm trying to work out if I've actually ever drunk before. Because it's 6%. So I think, Nick, you might have brought this down maybe at Christmas. It's
It's a strong one, yeah.
Woltop Scarborough Fair, strong, well hopped IPA, 6%. So the sun's shining here in Staffordshire. So I thought, well, not. So Bruce has temporarily left us because he's had to nick laptop off the kids and then he did their homework. So the plan for episode 57 is it's part two, really. Last time we had a catch up, it'd been a while since we had been on air. And we'd all been on various trips. I'd been off to Wales for a few days. Bruce had been across to Dublin and Ireland. Nick had been working, but had not that far away been to Scotland. And he did also tell us a little about a trip, a nice little trip he had around Whitby. And I think you went back to Whitby last weekend, Nick. Is that right?
I did the walk down the cinder track from Whitby down to Rubbins Bay and then came back. You come back along the cliff tops, which is part of Cleveland Way. It was a bit claggy. Obviously, we had a lot of rain, and even the National Park had put warning signs up to say that, you know, where the cliffs have, it's, as anybody who knows that coast, it's a mud shale coast. That's one of the reasons why it's famous for its jet, because many, many thousands of years ago, jet is actually monkey puzzle. Compressed monkey puzzle wood, and but as I say, every time you get a storm or every time you get some high tides, it washes a bit more of the cliff face away. And then you get the jet on the beach. Jet was made famous by Queen Victoria when she went into mourning when she lost her husband. She started to wear black and black jewellery. So that's one thing that Whitby is famous for, along with Dracula. But you, as I say, the cliffs are soft. It's, you know, it's quite surprising. I was a bit cautious myself because I was actually walking on my own. There weren't many other folks around because it wasn't a great day. Thankfully, it wasn't chucking it down, but it was still a bit damp. So I was just a bit aware of where I was walking. And it takes a bit longer coming back because you've got those gullies as well that you have to drop down into and then climb up back the other side. But yeah, I got back, went into the Abbey. Abbey was ticking over nicely, but because of the weather, I was the only person sat outside. And then just dropped down into town and went into Wetherspoons and had a couple of beers in there. I should have had a Saltwick Nab in the Abbey brewery, and then they had Saltwick Nab on in Wetherspoons. But I had a blonde in the Abbey brewery, and I had Saltwick Nab in Spoons. I should have had Saltwick Nab in both places and just compared them because the difference in price was £4.50 in the Abbey brewery and £3.20 in Spoons with my camera 50 pence voucher off £2.80. So a difference of nearly what shot on £2 for what would have been exactly the same beer. But we've discussed this about Wetherspoons prices before. I did manage to get, because I was working all last week, managed to get into the Pizza on the Square and had probably what would have been the best beer I've had so far this year. They had White Knight on, because obviously it's an Ossett pub, although it's branded as a salt pub. And it was absolutely fantastic. They've tweaked the prices up a little bit, but once again, with my camera discount, I'm paying £4 a pint now instead of £3.96. So a lot of people don't realise that, you know, a place like that has got real ale on. So if anybody's dropping it into Malton, and you're looking for a pint of real ale, sometimes you struggle now to find places open at certain times. Pizza on the Square is always open, and as I say, most often than not, it's a good pint on in there. And if you are a member of Cameron, then don't forget to use your camera card. I think there's only me and another guy that goes in there ever uses the camera card, because it's a bit of a joke with the girls behind the counter now. Any new members of staff in there, they look at you blankly, and then another member of staff has to show them where the butt is in on the till. But I say, that's probably my best beer so far this year was, Silver Knight, isn't it? Silver Knight is Ossett's beer, yeah.
Very good. So, as I said, hopefully Bruce will join us back soon. So the plan is to try and just think about if there's any difference between pubs between Wales, Ireland and Scotland compared to the ones that we have here in England. Obviously, we've had St. George's Day this week, which, as usual, was slightly hijacked by lots of people with red and white flags in London. So not particularly great. Bruce is joining us now, but let's just crack on with a little beer news. I'm going to throw this one out to us. I don't know if you've picked any of this up, but I think the next big beer is going to be Menabrea, which is another Italian beer. And it's just suddenly started to appear, and I've been looking.
It's a new magic, isn't it?
Yeah. And they've been quite interesting, really. Apparently they've managed to get into every one of the pizza chains, one of the slightly more upmarket pizza chains. And apparently it's been in The Guardian. They specifically targeted The Guardian, because again, Nick, this will be £7 a pint in most places. And interestingly, actually going through this, it's actually owned by the guys that run Tenants. So G&C are the group now that own Tenants, which might come into our discussion later on this evening. But again, they've obviously picked up, you know, you need to flog a Continental Lager. It is quite funny, though, because I have been trying to find out where it's brewed, and it's very secretive. It won't tell you where it's brewed. But I'm guessing if you're going to launch a lager in the UK, you don't brew it in Italy and ship it over, do you? Especially at the moment with all the challenges now. So I would imagine it's being brewed somewhere in Scotland, and as always, sticking down. And it's quite funny to look at some of the comments that I've got on there. Peroni went down the hill when they started brewing it over here. So there was some Retty. Well, yeah. When are they going to bloody brew it for you?
No, Peroni went downhill when, once again, like all the breweries, they mass produced it. So on that little Facebook quote there, it's saying it's still brewed in Italy. On here, it's saying Italian brewing company located in Biella, Piedmont. But I mean, the Tenants, they have massive capacity. Obviously, Tenants is a best-selling beer up in Scotland by a country mile. The brewery up there is absolutely massive, so it'll be cuckoo brewed up there, I would have thought. And once again, the artesian beer that Menabrea has been known for in Italy, when it's been produced in hundreds of thousands of gallons, we'll wait to see the quality is still there. I doubt it, but there we are.
Such a beer as Menabrea then, or is it just a fictitious beer?
There is one, it's got a long heritage, 180 years old brewery. Again, very bit like using like the old German laws, purity laws. So we'll see. That was it. I came across that there was a tweet. I was going to put it on here, but in the end, something on about Madry. It's just Carlsberg. It's just Carling, superbly marketed. Stick a geese on the logo that looks like Tyson Fury and sell it as trendy Spain lager brewed in Burton. And let's see what happens to Menabrea. But it's interesting, isn't it, how this works? So I don't know, again, if you pick this one up. Although I've actually heard there's been an addition to this story. So this is a pub in London called The Black Dog, which apparently has a link to one of Taylor Swift's new songs on her new double album that everybody's waiting for. I don't know exactly where it is in London. But anyway, they've been absolutely rammed, because apparently she sings a song about a bar in England that an ex-boyfriend of hers used to go to. And so this Black Dog somewhere in London has absolutely been overwhelmed with thousands of Swiftie fans Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens, it says there. And they've got a Taylor Swift cocktail, Taylor Swift burger. But apparently it's actually potentially a micro pub in Whitstable, which is the real Black Dog. So every Black Dog in the south of England now is quickly posting on social media, we are the pub that's mentioned. So by all accounts, somebody's tracked down. There's a micro brewery, which is actually shut, unfortunately, and it's now an art gallery somewhere in Whitstable, because they reckon the logo of that is the same as the logo that's on the artwork for the album. So it's funny how these things work. So who knew that Taylor Swift could...
I would suggest looking at that picture, Michael, though, the front of their pub, the fact that their name is a Black Dog, but the logo is actually a white dog.
Yeah.
a lot for the pub, sponsored by San Miguel, by the look of it. So it's designed to go arty farting, done black and white. But
apparently
it's got real ale in it.
But I got real ale, and apparently the real Black Dog that she refers to is actually the Black Dog Real Ale Bar. So we'll have to wait and see that one. And they'd only seen this. Somebody sneakily had sent this round. This is the latest Sam Smith's price list. This is the Northern pubs. The brewery has sent out. So very interesting in that they're saying £3.20 a pint for old brewery bitter. As probably pointed out, but if you look at the bottles and the lagers are getting very expensive. So it's £6.40 for a bottle of stout. I think the organic lager's always been more expensive, hasn't it? I mean, they're saying it's £4.60 it should be in Northern pubs. So just interesting that, you know, obviously they are feeling the squeeze, aren't they? They're putting their prices up because they stubbornly haven't for many, many years.
He's put everything. I've not been in since Saturday, Friday night. But I'm going tonight after two guys. Everything's gone up 20 pence, hasn't it? I can see.
You have to see, Bruce, whether that's true then, because this was on Twitter this week. I think somebody's obviously, I don't know. Well, I'm even putting it here, I'm slightly dodgy as well. We'll move on quickly.
£1.40 for a 330 bottle of for organic fruit, like it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. So Nick told us a little bit about his weekend. I had a Saturday off, so I decided that I was thinking about going off to Leek, and in the end, I had two jobs during the morning. So I ended up just going to a place called Woolstanton, which is a small kind of village, which is kind of tacked on to Newcastle-on-the-Lyme. But it's recently got a little bit of a reputation for becoming a little bit of a beer mecca. And they've got two micro bars. One I'd been in before the Whip It In, but I hadn't been to the Four Candles. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go along to the Four Candles. So I managed to get a lift up into Woolstanton, and I went into Four Candles, which looks very nice from the outside. And you know, we get as a good review. I walked in, and yes, there were hand pumps, and the hand pumps were in front of me was Old Speckled N and Abbott Ale. So I did kind of slightly deflate slightly and go, but then looking around, there was nobody else in the pub. In fact, sorry, there was. The pub was fairly busy, or bar. It's kind of an old shop. There was a couple who were just, well, they were both drinking WKD, and then they started doing shots. Everybody else was drinking lager. One chap, this whippy, did come in and have another pint, and he asked me what I was drinking, and I said I was drinking Speckled Hen, and he had a pint of Abbott. So I get that kind of deflation when you walk in thinking, God, you know, there's that many, again, local beers to us, Staffordshire beers, etc. So that was a slight dip. Then went off to the Whippet Inn, which was great, and they had a great range of beers in the Whippet Inn, which again is another Micro X shop just down the road, and then finished that little half of my little tour in the Archer. And I said, Nick, the Archer is really interesting in that it's a hotback pub. Hotback is based down, I think, somewhere like Wiltshire, kind of southern counties, and apparently they've got one pub in the whole of the north, and that's in Newcastle-on-the-Lyme, and they had about six or seven of the hotback beers on, which I quite like. They're quite hoppy, very much like kind of Citra Oakham type of style. But I think actually in the end I went for a non-hotback beer. And then went into town and I went to the normal places in town, and town was fairly busy. But I've got to say the best beer I had, Nick said it was his pint of White Knight. My best pint actually was from...
Silver King. Silver King.
My best pint was a pint from North Riding, which was very, very nice, which was, I think it's a collab beer that they're doing, but it was really a nice pale ale, very, very nice. Also managed to get a Bear Town Wachek, which we've talked about on the podcast before, and it's Bear Town's 30th birthday. Bear Town is the little kind of micro brew, bigger than that now, crossing Congleton. Yeah. And certainly during lockdown was one of my one of my goes to. So we mentioned, I know Bruce talked a little bit about going across to Ireland last time around. So I'm going to skip that. Bruce, have you been anywhere this weekend? Or you've been kind of in your new job?
Last time I could have a drink was Friday night. Well, actually, I could have a drink last night, but I didn't. So nothing to report. Everybody got last week. We did go into the Market Cat, Thornbridge Brewery Pub in York, the Peavey, but insane. £9.75 for a pint and a half in there, it was. Bonkers stuff. Getting very, very expensive in there.
Do you think that's merely to try and keep the groups out, though, Bruce? You know,
I have well-behaved groups in.
The other type of groups, Bruce. The shrieking women carrying naked bloke men around and stuff like that. I mean, it is in the city centre. You have to know where it is. But at the same time, you know, that's one of the pubs I think probably wasn't get abused like some of the places do.
Yeah, I mean, it was packed across all three floors and there was knocking out loads of pizzas doing really well. But you're just thinking, crikey, you know. I mean, one thing we'll have to do is in our neighbourhood now, we're seeing our first micro bar in the near part of York I live in now in Aiken. We've got, I think we get like in Italian. I think a lot of micro pubs in suburbs are going to be the way to go for the city because I think the cost of getting into town, getting home, the city centre prices, they're going to ultimately shoot themselves in the foot. I suppose it's looking like a lot of these Stonegate pubs appear as though they're on the cusp of closing down, or it's going to be some kind of fire sale. So I think we're going to see more.
What about Brew York, Bruce? They're expanding, aren't they? They're buying pubs now. I'm wondering whether they're increasing their business with the hope that one of the big brewers will buy them out. Because it seems to be strange time. I mean, they've always been there and I think they've always been successful. But I was thinking this earlier. I very, very rarely see Brew York beers anywhere else in anybody else's pubs.
You do around here.
They're on the beer distributors list. You do surprise when they pop up. They're very much, and they've got a very strong brand, but I have a funny feeling you could possibly be right there, Nick.
I think a lot of the specialist pubs have them on. I was just saying about the Stonegate thing. We interesting again round here, we've been quite a bit of pushback. Pubs themselves saying we are not closing, despite what people keep saying. You know, we didn't open this morning because we never open on a Monday morning. That's why we weren't open. It's not that we shut. So, and I think one of them said, you know, we're not shutting, and nowhere are the other 11 Stonegate pubs in this area at the moment. You know, we're all open for trade. So, anyway, let's get back onto theme. So, Bruce gave us a very romantic reflection of his trip, especially to the grave diggers across in Dublin and one or two other pubs as well. So I think we're going to set off with Bruce with his kind of eulogy to the Irish pub. And I think obviously Nick and I have also been to Ireland and visited pubs. I'm trying to work out where my best pub was. I think Keogh's is the one in Dublin for me. I don't know that you went there, Bruce. It's a bit further up Grafton Street, Keogh's. It's quite near to the college and stuff.
Like
the grave diggers.
It's brilliant, Keogh's, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then another Keogh's actually is in Kilmore Quay. Kilmore Quay is down in kind of Waterford, Wessex. It's a very nice little, a little bit like a mini Whitby. It's a very quaint little fishing village. And down there's one main street, and down that main street is Keogh's there as well. And that's another Irish. If I was going to go somewhere to say that's an Irish pub, it's typical, just full of people all day long, do a fantastic fish chowder. So Irish pubs, I don't know really. You talked about the atmosphere in them last time. Obviously, they're very popular with tourists. I think one thing would say up until probably last, I don't know, maybe 10 years, they were a bit of a beer desert, weren't they? Because it was Guinness, Beamish or Murphy's, really. And then Harp Lager, wasn't it? It was very hard to find a handful of beer in Ireland. Yeah. And we have talked before that there is still some quite anarchic licensing laws in Ireland. And in fact, it's almost impossible, particularly Northern Ireland, to set a brewery up because the way that the licensing laws work, very much controlled, particularly in the north, by the almost kind of, you know, whatever the word is, temperate. Obviously, people like Ian Paisley and co. were very, very against drink. I think that's changed now. I think there is more of a craft beer thing. And obviously, there are some very interesting Irish breweries. Even Guinness and people have moved into ale, haven't they? Maybe not always successful, So go on then, Bruce. Tell us a bit about the Irish pub. Where would you put it?
Well, I think we talked City ones. I think some of the rural ones are truly the stuff of storybooks. I mean, I remember years ago, we've got family in Derry, and I know one day we drove down through Donegal to Port Salon on the Donegal coast, and there was a pub there, and I just wandered in without any warning of what was to come, and you know, these amazing shops that had a bar counter serving Guinness. It was totally, utterly untouched there at Port Salon, and I could not believe it. I mean, it truly was the stuff of storybooks. You know, the people stood about, a few old blokes stood about drinking pints of Guinness. People were popping proper visions. Kids were popping in for quarters of sweeties. It was astonishing. And I think when they've done those authentic, I think they evoke that thing in us, that if they close their eyes and dream of the Irish pub, they do exist there. I've never been to Dingle. I'm told there are a couple of pubs like that in Dingle, really. Mm. And I think, yeah, I mean, so in Dublin, I mean, obviously, exaggerate it, the caricature themselves to a certain degree. The Temple Bar, I know, has been gone viral again with another massive receipt for about €86 for about seven drinks, hasn't it, recently? But I suppose you go to any tourist attraction now, I mean, you know, I mean, you could pay 10, 11, 12, 13 pounds to go to some, quite frankly, you know, a bar in museums, couldn't you, trudge about where you'd sit in there for an hour at most of these places there. Sit there and I was drinking the atmosphere, getting a pint with it. And I think no matter where you are, city or rural, I think there's an Irish pub for everybody, isn't there, really? Mm. And I have to say as well, that the general standard of food they serve in the pubs is far, far superior to anything we get over here. Because, of course, the great thing is there are no chain pubs in Ireland, are they? I mean, there are barely any. Mm. I know some people own two or three pubs, but there are no pub chains. And I think that's the single biggest contributing factor to keeping their pub culture as it should be, isn't it? I mean, you know, we talked last week about the Duke of York at Whitby. Absolute classic pub. Everybody would love that. Absolutely ruined by being bought by a company with purportedly £2 billion in debt. I mean, it's enough to turn to a communist, isn't it, really? It's absolutely bloody crazy. And I think this is it. They recognise the heritage. They know what they stand for. They know the place, how important they are to the economy of that country, the place in everyday Irish culture. And they all do the best to live up to it, really. And I think it's just something that's so sadly, like everything, it's just, you know, just dying now. Our pubs are dying, at least over there. I think everybody recognizes the worth of it to the country, really, in the society.
Okay,
I think O'Neill's is probably my favorite pub in Dublin. Obviously, I like the Palace, but I always tend to go to O'Neill's. I'm going somewhere, I always go there for food because they have like a carry on, but they have a lot of other stuff, and that's very cosmopolitan. You know, you get a lot of students in there. It's I think it's on, is it on Devonshire Street? O'Neill's. It's always sometimes a bit tricky to find.
Kind of where the civil service area of Dublin is.
That's the church they've made into a tourist information centre. So if you go to the tourist information centre, it's just diagonal across from there. But it's got that fantastic little bar right in the corner where literally you can get about eight people in it. You know, it's a huge place. Yeah, three stories. But right on the corner, that's the only way you can get in that from the door from the outside. And most people go in the big doors either side. But you go right in the corner, it's literally like a little triangular-shaped bar. And that's a great spot. And then, in fact, in Belfast, believe it or not, it gets a load of stick for being a tourist trap. But I was disappointed with the bars in Belfast, apart from the Crown. And the Crown is the one that, you know, it gets all the plaudits. But I suppose we were lucky because we got there just as it was opening. I think we get there at 12 o'clock on Saturday. So we got straight in, and as a lot of these bars in Northern Ireland have, they have the stalls still, don't they? A bit like, I mean, obviously Sam Smith's have this in London, where you can get yourself a little stall. It's like a little stable. Still got the doors in there. You can almost lock yourself away. But it's great because you're not so much people watching, but then you listen to other people's conversations. You know, the stalls either side of you, and you can hear people coming and going. So as I say, we were fortunate that when we got in there, there was about half a dozen of us waiting outside. We all got in there. We all got settled down. And I can imagine, when the coach parties are coming in. But architecturally, when the place was empty, you could really appreciate as well for, you know, the architecture in there and say the fact that they've managed to retain this stall. So, yeah, a lot of people might be a bit surprised because they'll probably go in the Crown at different times of the day and think, no, it is a bit of a tourist trap.
It's just that big area.
Get yourself when it first opens.
It's that big space in the middle, I think, that it's a bit of a standing pub. And I think some of that is going back to the bad old days when there was a curfew in Belfast and the pub shut at kind of 7:30. So a lot of people would leave work at 5:30 and literally go and get 5-6 pints down them. So quite a lot of those city centre pubs in Dublin have that big space next door. Just Robinson's next door is the same, and I think that's part of that legacy. They've kept some of those stalls. Although I've always found if somebody's sat in those stalls, trying to get in them is almost impossible. Occasionally, there'll be a group say, "Yeah, come and join us," but a lot of the time they don't.
If you've not come across
The Irish Pub, there's a great kind of documentary film called The Irish Pub, and it kind of looks at, as Bruce saying, it's actually got the palace is the bar they use in Dublin, but then they go out to some local pubs, one in Westport, which is the one of the Dubliners has that pub, and a couple of other famous ones. And there is one of those where they sell everything. They sell washing powder and soap and a loaf of bread as well, which is really good. I just wonder if you take... If you take Guinness out of an Irish pub, though, I'm not quite sure what's left. I think there's maybe quite a big hole there, isn't there?
No, very true. Good point.
Or Murphy's or Beamish or whatever there. Right, let's move on. Nicholas, Scotland pub, I'm going to give you that one. And to me, Scottish pubs are quite, I don't know, they're very quaint, very kind of, you know, oldie worldy, like the old Bridge Inn in Aviemore, or they're like the Klansmen on the Scottish TV program. They're kind of covered in tartan, one
there's no windows.
Kind of red brick drinking tenants' den. So, but as we said before, obviously not in Edinburgh and in Glasgow, particularly, there's some of those gin palaces, aren't they? Very much like the ones on the U Lake in London. Yeah. And I can't remember which one that is. I've got a picture over there. But what's your view of Scottish pubs?
Well, the last time I was in Scotland was before Christmas, and out the pubs. We didn't go a lot of pubs. Managed to get in the fine brewery, and that's on a farmyard. So obviously in terms of tradition, there's not much traditional about it, but nice little place, ticking over, good selection of beers. But coming back to Wetherspoons, I'm afraid, Oban, perfect location, right on the quayside there, when the ferries are working and operating, seeing the ferries coming and going, fresh seafood stalls there, which Oban is famous for. They actually won an architectural award for that building. And I say you've got the big floor-to-ceiling windows looking out over the bay in Oban. So on a nice day, obviously you can sit outside. I actually made a point of sitting outside as well. But on a mucky day, you can sit inside and still see the world going by. And once again, cheap beer. I suppose in Edinburgh, it's a while since I've been up to Edinburgh. And there's one or two, you know, you come out the station, you cross over Waverley Bridge, and then you go to its next street behind running parallel to Prince's Street, innit? Last time I went, I got in the coffee bar.
Cafe Royal. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It is, because once again, it's very much, you know, that mahogany central bar. And you can see, you know, it's still quite a grand place. And you do get a certain sort of customer in there. But it's weird things like, you know, you go down to the gents' toilets, and all these places have got the toilets in the basement. And they've got lobsters all over the walls and stuff like that. And, you know, so it was quite nice to sit in there and, just off the main street there, you know, it ticks over, but away from the main hub and bub. But yeah, etched glass, you know, Victorian drinking palaces again, certainly in the capital city of Edinburgh and some of the other more historical cities and towns in Scotland. The beer, a bit like Ireland, you know, I know there are more craft brewers there now, but you expect the Scottish beer for it to be fairly dark and fairly sweet, don't you?
I don't like it.
That's typical of the Scottish beer. And there are some of the smaller microbreweries now bringing a lot of the different styles. But on the whole, that's what you'd expect to get. But then, of course, don't forget about Dooker's. I mean, Dooker's broke the mould as a Scottish beer when that first hit the scene down here. It was a refreshing change, wasn't it? And yet you barely see it around now, because that was the Caledonian Brewery who... doesn't exist anymore, does it?
I don't think. It's not Green King pubs.
Green King. I had a pint of Dooker's of the week, actually. Yeah, it was in one of the chain pubs. Use your voucher, Nick, for one of the chain pubs. And obviously, I think Sky Brewery, Orkney Brewery came on again probably about 20 years ago now. Cairngorm Brewery, which again brought, I guess, more of a British style. Because, of course, the other thing I remember about Scotland, when I was younger, was all these strange names. So 70 Bob and 80 Bob, 80 Shilling. 80
Bob, 80
Bob. Still the way, isn't it, though, yeah.
60 bob. Yeah. And it was all to do, it wasn't with the tax on the barrels, wasn't it? And how strong the beer was. So you had to get across that a little bit. And then, of course, it was all tartan and Tennent's, wasn't it? Tartan special. And obviously Tennent's and the yellow cans. And that well, season
we drink. Don't forget that it was Tennent's. They were one of the first brewers to bring lager into this country. Mm. And you remember the politically incorrect cans they used to have. You can still find them on eBay.
The ladies, they always used to, the ladies on,
a yeah. Scottish lassie on the tin. This is Shirley from Fyford. Yeah, completely politically incorrect. But I suppose if you're not drinking Tennent's, you're drinking Buckfast, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm told the best pub, the one I've never been to it yet, I'm going to go next time I go up, is the Oxford Bar. I'm told is a lot of people write that the best pub in Edinburgh. I think Ian Rankin drinks there or something.
Bit of a Lovey's bar, isn't it? Yeah, it's a bit of a writer's Lovey's Edinburgh fringe kind of bar.
That makes sense.
It's not big, is it? No. You know, sometimes I'm afraid when you go in those sort of places, even though it's become a bit of a tourist trap now, you're sometimes half afraid that you're going to sit on a regular seat. And I could see it as being one of those sort of places that, you know, you're completely innocently getting half an hour before big Stan comes in at 2 o'clock and he'll walk in and he'll stand over you because you're on his stool and either somebody will tell you or they won't tell you. They'll snigger behind the hands and all you'll get is big Stan's burning eyes in the back of your head with his eyes. And I'm afraid, I don't know the Oxford Bar, when I've seen pictures of it, it looks like one of them small places that I should imagine everybody's got their own seat and their own place. And whilst they tolerate outsiders going in there, I don't know.
We'll have to have a look. I was at South Queens Ferry to the Ferry Inn along the main street. And that was a cracking little boozer. Some of those Scottish pubs have a certain degree of homeliness about them, don't they? This was very much one of those.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Now, that was a cracking little place, I have to say.
I put the Old Bridge in the Abbeymore, which I've been to many, many times, which actually is quite a big foodie place now. It's right down by the Speck. It's flooded quite a lot, actually. But it's a traditional kind of old Scottishy pub, peat fire. Always has three or four really nice ales on, lots of whiskey. One half is a little bit pubby, and the other half's quite a posh kind of restaurant. And then I think the other one I put down, actually, was Nick. I don't remember, Nick. I've been a couple of times myself. Obviously, Leith's a great place to drink, especially down by the wharf there in Leith. And there was the King's Walk that we went to, I think, one New Year's. That is quite small, but again, has got that much history. You know, you think about the history of Leith Docks and down there.
Oh, Leith, yeah.
And that's definitely one I would probably head down to Leith. And there's quite a good beer scene in Leith now. And you get slightly off the, I wouldn't say it's off the tourist trap, it's not, but it's slightly kind of away from the more, the normal haunts, really, of Scottish. Right, guys, I think we're going to have a...
There's one thing, public transport is good in Edinburgh. Really good, the buses and the trams.
Yeah.
They actually do work, so easy to get around, to get out to these outer skirts. I mean, I know you mentioned South Queensferry, Bruce. I know we've done South Queensferry on the bus before, and it's fairly easy to get up there and see the Forth Road Bridge and the Firth Forth.
I think the best pub in Scotland is on the border. There's a pub in Berwick. I can't for the life of me forget the name of it. It's not too far from the station. Come out of the station, down the little road, turn right. It's about 2 minutes walk. And on the right-hand side bar of it, there's a fantastic island bar. And it's tiled throughout. That's a stunning pub. I'm going to go visit it soon. I will have to visit and have a little trip out. That's absolutely fantastic. I'm told there's a cracking pub too in North Berwick as well. I don't want to explore more Scottish pubs. So I've got back to visit. I mean, watch Steve Marsh on YouTube. And he does some pub tours occasionally on there. He can be there and he's got to Dundee. It's quite good because you've got to get to see him. Well, for research purposes, worth looking at him, really. He does some cracking Scottish pub tours.
Right, gents, we're going to take a pause there and go and refill our glasses. And we'll come back shortly and we'll have a quick chat about Welsh pubs.
So I might go to Whitby to see all the steampunk